All right, folks, got a good show for you here. We have Guy Malone in studio with John Arthur, a fellow Roswellian. Guy and John are friends. I've recently met John personally here today, actually, for Guy Malone's podcast, Bitcoin for a Better World, the show which I am currently producing. In the meantime, let's roll the intro.
Having recently been displaced due to COVID, with all the crazy life twists and turns that have followed suit, we have unintentionally crash-landed in a town embracing its pop culture notoriety, Roswell, New Mexico. What is reality really like living in alien town? From art and music to UFOs and more, tune in while I document our discovery of Roswell on our journey to become full-fledged Roswellians. You're listening to The William Atkinson Show. Let's get to it.
All right. So, John, say hi.
Hello.
And Guy.
Hey, hey.
Okay, so there we go. We got John Malone. First episode. I do apologize for being back so late from episode one. We have recently had issues with the studio. One, I had to tear it down. Two, sold the house. Three, moved and had to rebuild. So this is the fifth studio I have now built.
Whoa.
You know, in three different locations. I've had
multiple. You can't claim legitimate reasons as an excuse. That's unacceptable.
Yeah, well, you know, we ended up moving houses, so it's not like I can cookie cut one little studio and move. Well, I suppose I might have been able to do that if I gotten the right contractor at, you know, obscene amounts of money.
The About right 30% contractor. 30% more than you want.
Oh, more than 30, I imagine, yeah. all right, well, William Atkinson Show, Episode 2, here with Guy Malone as a guest, and John Arthur, a special guest in the studio. Guy is running his own podcast, Bitcoin for a Better World, which I am producing. Guy, why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
I'm not running it without you, that's for sure. But yeah, I've always, most people, especially in Western America, worlds, whatever, white folk, when you hear Bitcoin, it automatically jumps into the investments category or box in your brain. But as the internet incredibly advanced the technology and the access to services and communication, and really just gave human rights to people that were without them, the internet changed the world technologically and from a human rights perspective. And I would just, I'm noticing Bitcoin is doing the same thing. It has a bad rep, but there's many ways that don't depend on viewing it as an investment that are improving communities, bringing financial services, even like basically building wells and beefing up the economies and allowing people that live under dictatorships to dissent with their government. That includes us.
So the podcast obviously is about Bitcoin, and I believe you are targeting specifically individuals like John Arthur here, who you have coined No Coiner John.
A label I proudly wear.
Okay, yes, sir.
Very good. So
it's in the Urban Dictionary. Look it up, No Coiner.
Just kind of for beginners in the Bitcoin world or people like myself and John who have absolutely no understanding of it or experience or exposure to it.
Yeah, we all have the same questions starting out, and part of the journey is that there's anybody that claims to be an expert in Bitcoin run. I've got 5 years study. The guest I had on today, she's been in it since 2013, and she said it too. We're all still learning. There's so many aspects. But most of the common questions, I think it's frequently asked questions. Once they've been asked by others in years past, the answers are there. So I just help sharing people that are a bit curious, bi curious, but with a T. if you have one or two questions, I'll try to help you with the right answer, steer you towards the best information on whatever topic you're wrestling with.
So if you're interested in more, go to www.bitcoinforabetterworld.com. In the meantime, John, you now had two guest appearances, if you will, on the Bitcoin program. This show isn't about Bitcoin, clearly. This show here is just about life and Roswell and whatnot. But introduce yourself, tell us what you do, and how you ended up friends with Guy Malone, kind of your brief bio.
Well, my name's John Arthur, and I can go the typical route of giving you all the details and the nitty-gritty, but at the end of the day, I'm the guy that drives around with cinder block on the side of his truck. Most Roswellians know me because they see one of my trucks driving all over town. We specialize in masonry installation. Brick, block, stone, tile, stucco, and concrete. I'm fourth generation at it, actually. I grew up listening to my dad talk about the intricacies and the complaints, and layout strategies, etc., etc., growing up as a young child. My dad was very, very anti-government, so one of the things that he enjoyed was a very holistic homeschool approach towards practical common sense education. I was glued to his hip, going to business meetings, going to bids, going to, frankly, argue with material suppliers, sometimes I remember. And it was a very good education, and it introduced me to a lot of people who actually make Roswell run. And it's been such a blessing being in that position because, you know, you got friends in low places. But the friends in low places oftentimes grow up and mature to be very influential characters in Roswell. And I am blessed to be a part of that community here. Thank you for having me on your show.
No, absolutely happy to be here. How did you end up meeting Guy?
Did the CIA allow us to talk about it now? Are we still under a gag order?
No. I am, so you take over.
Actually, Guy and I met through a mutual friend named Ken, and I think he would be an excellent guest one of these days if you ever want an introduction to him. We met through a church organization called Jesus Tribe. And what we do is, our mission statement is to help people grow in their confidence with their closeness with God. And Guy and I both operate in that as members of that organization. And Guy, we've been a part of it for what, 7 years now, something like that? Has it been that long?
Three.
No. I've known Ken for 7 years. Bingo. That's what it was. Yeah. And this has been one of his dreams for so long.
Yeah.
True. And when it finally came to fruition, I was very happy to jump on that with him. And you've been an instrumental key player in a lot of the decisions and a lot of the things that we've done. So Guy and I have been able to collaborate on several things in the past. From political campaigns to evangelical endeavors.
And cooking. Discussions.
Cooking discussions. So you both enjoy cooking then, yes?
Oh, I used to be the head chef at the Tenney Silver Dollar for Mike Hurst.
Okay.
Yep. I was the third chef in line. And I stepped in without any formal education. We were going through a little over $3,000 a week in groceries, and most of it being thrown out when the last chef, who was very qualified for the position, when he decided to step out and move on with his own endeavors, we were in a bind. We didn't know what to do, and I stepped up to the plate. And it was actually my decision to take the Silver Dollar from being this fancy destination to being the homegrown restaurant that it once was. I took the menu from 23 items, I think it was, something like that, and we choked it down to 7. And my motto in that kitchen, my very first official statement as chef of that kitchen, was simplicity. That's all it is we are going to cook simple American steakhouse classics. And under my purview there, Tenney, the Silver Dollar, was able to experience a revitalization of back to the roots. And then I'm self-employed and a college student, so I stepped back. I said, this is too much for me to handle. I helped, I had the fun, it goes on my resume, I'm gone. It was a fun experience.
So how long were you operating as chef?
About 6 months.
Okay, so yeah. It was kind of a short tenure. So you went from being kind of a contractor's son to working in a kitchen, and then back to construction, where you're now working in masonry, brick, and stucco, and concrete type products. With all of that experience, it sounds like you were born and raised here in Roswell or Southeast New Mexico.
My mother was a traveling nurse, and I grew up here in Roswell went to Gateway all the way up until sixth grade, which time we moved to Modesto, California. My mom secured a job over there. It was a fantastic opportunity. She did great over there. I had to grow up quick, moving from state to state, especially at such an important age in a young man's development. It forced me to be able to make quick connections with people. And it really taught me how to listen, because the New Mexico culture is so radically different from Central Valley culture that I was in culture shock. It was very difficult.
Can you unpack that a little bit using Guy's phrase, unpack?
Yeah, well,
I stole it too.
It's very true. When you hear about the rest of the nation not knowing that we're an actual state, it is the God's honest truth. I had teachers actually tell me that they thought my English was fantastic.
Wow.
Like, English is a second language. John, you have thrived. You were brilliant at speaking English. How difficult was it for you to learn? Or we'd have state assemblies and the New Mexico flag would go through in Sacramento and in a bleachers holding thousands of people. I was the only one to stand up and go, woohoo, New Mexico. They didn't know what green chili was. It used to be a double dog dare to go eat a hot sauce packet from Taco Bell.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, a lot of people didn't eat Taco Bell original tacos just because it was too spicy.
You know, it's I didn't have that experience, but it was largely most likely a situation because I grew up in a home where both parents were from Roswell, New Mexico.
Oh.
And so we, you know, just was part of family conversations in the background, you know.
I see. Are you not from here?
No. So mom and dad are from Roswell, and dad was in the service during Vietnam. Riverside, California is where he ended up after being discharged. My sister was born in Southern California. Then late 70s, mid 70s somewhere, they moved north to Vancouver, Washington.
Way up north.
So just, well, not BC, but Washington. So okay. Portland, Oregon.
Okay.
So Columbia and the Willamette River area. I was born there and grew up. Eventually, I ended up going to Texas. Okay. So my sister and I are born on the West Coast.
Okay.
So with that said you had culture shock between New Mexico, where you grew up to, you know, fifth, sixth grade. Mm-hmm. So that'd be what, 10 to 12 years old?
I was 11 years old when we moved.
And then you moved to California. How long were you in California?
8 years off and on.
Okay. So throughout your teen years.
Oh, and they were tumultuous. We had a lot of family arguments, and grandma she was the matriarch of our family, and she got diagnosed with dementia, and everything went up, and it was absolute chaos. So I ended up moving back and forth about six times.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I started, believe it or not, I think it qualifies under statute of limitations, I'm okay. I actually drove from New Mexico to California probably six or seven times before I ever even had my learner's permit.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. I used to haul construction equipment around. I used to haul a skid steer on a trailer around town. Actually, one time I had to drop off the skid steer at a construction site and take the truck and trailer to Roswell Driving School and park the truck and trailer there and go stand in line so I could get my practice for my learner's permit.
Oh, that's really interesting. We'll throw that under farm to market.
Yeah. As long as you put the orange triangle in the back of the tractor, it's okay, right?
Yeah, there you go. So, with that being said, the show here is about life in Roswell. Obviously, there's the alien thing. And then there's Roswell that, you know, everybody else knows.
The real Roswell.
The real Roswell. I have, in episode one, described it as the culture here is the clashing of kind of the old West meets alien controversy from the perspective of, you know, what people see from the outside. But internally, Roswell, as we see it, you know, living here, it's very agrarian and kind of a slower lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
Relative to Central California, or, you know, the Modesto area, which is...
almonds and tomatoes.
So what's your experience here moving back?
I have lived in quite a few places. I've been all over the United States. And out of everywhere I've ever lived, Roswell's been my favorite. I love Roswell.
How so? And why?
The reason why is because it's a quiet culture. People say that it's the most dangerous place in the state per capita. And I promise you, it's who you know. If you owe people money, you're involved in drugs, or you're part of a criminal organization, it's violent. If you are not akin to that, Roswell is a beautiful, peaceful place full of opportunity and prosperity. There are so many opportunities here. People neglect to see it purely out of a habit because it's what they've been taught. My experience here in Roswell is we are a few years behind the national curve. And in many ways, that's a good thing because it allows us to be able to look at the decisions that these other states and other communities around us have made and gives us a buffer time to see the repercussions of their actions. And we can slow the impact and the shockwave when it hits to Roswell. It gives our city council members, our county commissioners, our police staff, it gives everybody ample time to prepare before that shockwave hits us. And so it's a very slowed down community. But the way that I see Roswell is, I agree with you, it's very culturally different. And I can go into more detail on that. I used to be a security guard at Way Out West, where we had the two bars. We had half hip hop, half cowboy. And the clash all the time. Thursday nights were notoriously bad ladies' nights because all of these Western culture, the cowboys, the Tejanos, whatever you want to call them, they, Norteñas, whatever, they would bring all of these absolutely beautiful women. And then the girls grew up in public school, which is obviously more hip hop related. They would come with the cowboys and they would migrate to the hip hop side. And it was a bad design, but the patio allowed both of these cultures to be able to mix in the back patio. Alcohol, jealousy, and it was a bad situation. And we got to see the worst of Roswell. But in that moment, when things were bad, the people who were not involved in that violent situation would band together as a community and they would eject the people who were causing problems in the bar.
But not in a vigilante way.
No, not at all. They stood behind us as the security guards and they made sure that everything stayed, I don't want to say fair, but they made sure that things did not get out of hand. They respected boundaries until it became a personal problem. And I see that in our community as well. We will tolerate a lot, we'll be patient with everybody, but when there's something that we do not like as a community occurs, we band together. We band together more so than most other places in the state of New Mexico.
Guy, you have a thoughtful look on your...
I'm learning. I'm loving hearing him say that. He knows 10 or 100 times more about Roswell, life in Roswell, especially from an insider politics and business point of view than I do.
So from that, you have your own business. Mm-hmm. You've worked here, one as a security guard, yeah. As you just mentioned.
We've done so much work here in Roswell, working in heavy construction, which is masonry. Oftentimes, work slows down real bad in the winter. So we go get jobs as cooks, security guards. Not many of us are personable people, so we stay away from Uber.
So Roswell's just under 50,000 last I
disagree
heard.
With that. If you actually look at our community, I've been enough places. It sure seems like we're at the 75,000 mark. There are so many, but Roswell does carry a rebellious nature only because we had to get so tough so quick when they shut Walker Air Force Base down. Roswell was destined to doom. There were a lot of people that thought we were going to end up like Kenna. They thought our water was going to run out, and they thought the industry was going to leave. The base closed. Oh, no.
This was something that I brought up in the previous episode where Roswell was a thriving community, kind of growing. You had the Old West meets technologically advanced rocketry, you know, coming into the 30s with Robert Goddard. And then obviously the Walker Air Force Base, right, with the bomber squad that was here, the military's being invested real heavily. They mm-hmm. were just expanding the dorms down there. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, it shuts down.
Politically motivated,
boom.
Yeah.
Walker Air Force Base closes. Within a year, the population here drops 15-20%. And there's a cultural repercussion and economics and everything else where it's just a complete a chaotic environment in many ways. And like you said, destined to doom going out of the closure of Walker Air Force Base. What do you think changed? You said that, you know, we had to grow, get tough quick. Like what?
Sheer determination of will.
So what makes Roswell unique in that regard?
We're survivors.
How so?
Because we have survived economic problems and doom forecasting that other societies cannot deal with. When Spring River dried up and the water stopped flowing in Spring River, people thought the artesian wells were going to run out of water. And so we had an issue where people were like, oh no, Roswell's out of water. Well, you can't survive in the desert without water. Look at Timberon. I know it's not Roswell, but Timberon was forecasted to be this great Ruidoso of the South. Is that the San Juan Mountains? I forget. Anyways, the South Mountains over there by Alamogordo. And one geologist produced a report saying that there was not enough groundwater. If you go on the state map and look at what they proposed for Timberon, it's massive, it's sprawling, it's beautiful. It could have happened, we didn't have water. That's why it failed. Roswell's encountered those issues. We've gone through severe droughts where it was almost impossible to survive back before the state's engineers really started coming in and regulating water well usage agriculturally. The thing that I see about Roswell is we have survived the base closing. We have survived violent crime. We've survived the organized crime moving in and taking over for a long time, short after the base closed. Up until now, we have lost almost all of our manufacturing. Leprino Foods and Agcro, and I think there's three other factories, remain local. Of course, we have AirCell and whatnot, but I think for Roswell to move forward, those are some of the small points about Roswell, but I think to really move forward, we need to be able to develop the idea that more than one thing can happen at the same time.
So in the pre-show, we were actually talking a little bit about this. I do want to hit just a little bit on the resiliency here of Roswell and then move to the what your vision for Roswell might look like. The question that I have in my head is, do you think that the roots of Roswell being one of the cowboy nature, cattle ranching lifestyle coming out of the 1800s, the Lincoln County War, you know, all of that, into the technological era, the roots of Roswell being that cattle ranching, Old West, do you think that that spawns or is partly rooted to the resiliency of Roswell, the character of being able to survive in
the
desert?
Absolutely. Absolutely. In the 19, let me give you a story. In the 1920s, right during the middle of the Dust Bowl, there was a family of ranchers in Kenna. The husband was on the road crew that went down to Carlsbad Caverns. He was one of the first people, one of the first 100, I think it was, to witness the mouth of Carlsbad Caverns and go walking in there and exploring. However, that's in Carlsbad. Do you know where Kenna is? Halfway to Portales?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyways, it used to be a thriving community until water shut down. And this family didn't starve because the dad traveled so much. The lady had seven kids. Two rode on the horse with her, the mother. Two rode on the front, one on the back. And then she used to tie their diapers along and pick up the leg of the table and put the long-tailed diaper underneath there, and they would scurry around in their little 2 square foot until she rode back. Well, one day she got bucked off her horse and she broke her ankles when she landed. And I think it was a Tuesday or something when that happened. Anyway, she drug herself through the ants and mesquite bushes a little over a mile, hands and knees, back there, took care of the kids, and then waited until Saturday when my great-grandfather got back to the ranch. And that's just a testament to a little bit of the resiliency that was passed down. And that is culturally learned, because when you're on a ranch by yourself, it is impossible to survive unless you're tough.
And fantastic story, and I you know, hear a lot of those stories from you know, growing up, because grandpa was a cattle rancher here, and So we have the resiliency and the community culture, one of being able to survive in at the face of adversity. Moving forward, you had mentioned you have a vision for Roswell, or a goal or a dream of what you would like to see here.
I guess you could summarize it as my prayer vision for Roswell is that they would have to continue the relief route all the way to Red Bridge and back up to Pine Lodge and connect on the old Clovis Highway, purely because the infrastructure of Roswell has grown to a point that it is necessary to be able to encompass Roswell through that highway system, through the loop system like Lubbock has. My dream for Roswell is that the state would have to produce a interstate from Carlsbad connecting in San Angelo all the way through Carlsbad through Roswell to connect to I-25. I-40. That is my vision for Roswell. And it is perfectly capable of doing it. If you take an outsider's view and look at Roswell, there is a ember, there is a small flame at the bottom of that nest of opportunity. And if we would change our culture from hopelessness to joy, Roswell would explode. The only people holding ourselves back right now is us.
So we have a culturally learned inheritance of resiliency. You just mentioned a culture of hopelessness. Can you bridge the gap there for us?
The emotional word I would use is languished. Do you know what that means? Languished is the feeling of when you are down but not depressed. We have had to be in survival mode for so long. We train our youth to see Roswell as, oh, it's hard to live here, it's hard to do this, and our youth are leaving the state of New Mexico faster than we're replenishing them. If we change that culture from, oh, it's been so hard for so long, and look at the opportunities we've been given here, that would change. If we can change that culture of languishment, which honestly, when you're in financial hard times for months and months and months, you're not depressed. You're not sad. Sometimes it feels a little hopeless. You're like, golly day, will it ever end? But the actual word for that is languished, which is just, it's been so heavy for so long. Come on, let's just do it again and get it over with.
So the comment I have here, and it's kind of a question at the mm-hmm. same time, many of the people that I know actually moved here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so my wife and I...
Because they see the possibility.
So my wife and I came here for my parents. Guy came here from Nashville. Mm-hmm. We know a friend of mine who I hung out with last night came in from Arizona. I've got a buddy that came in from Texas, mm-hmm. Dallas-Fort Worth area. We have a couple of friends of ours that came here from Kansas City. That's Chris and Angela, mm-hmm. who I've got on an episode with them for the RCLT. So a lot of the people that seem to have been within our circle have come here from outside.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about a culture that has languishment, right? Mm-hmm. Where our the youth that grow up here are leaving because of hopelessness or just from that perspective. It feels like if people are moving here and people are moving away, what's the gap that our listeners might be missing in the rooted culture that grew up here versus the culture that's coming in?
Most of the reason people did not leave shortly after the base collapsed is because they were in poverty and unable to afford the move. My family was in poverty and unable to afford the move. My grandfather was a bricklayer with 7 kids. He tried to move. It was too expensive. And I think a lot of that was that way. The medium household income for Roswell, I think, is like $18,000, something like that, 18 to 21. We're in the poverty level. A huge portion of Roswell's in the poverty level. Guy?
Yeah, I think 18,000 is the number for state aid poverty. That is poverty level. I didn't know that you would agree or that anyone would state a percentage, being most of Roswell lives at that 18 to 21 level.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm not exactly sure where those numbers are. I know that that you have a significant proportion of the population here that is impoverished.
Yes, yes.
Tragically so.
Absolutely.
And that, of course, limits a lot of economic opportunity for them generationally because mm-hmm. of the psyche that can come mm-hmm. along with that and the potential of getting involved with the wrong crowd, which, as you mentioned and kind of opened the show with, mm-hmm. the violent crime that does exist here is segmented to a general way of life that some people can get tapped into.
Absolutely. It's very easy. If you look at Los Angeles, a primary motivator for a lot of people joining violent gangs is poverty. They don't have other opportunities, but that's not the direction that I want to take my appearance on the show. I want to talk about the possibilities that Roswell has. I want to talk about how we can get out of this culture that we've languished in since the 70s. It's been horrible. It's time for Roswell to grow and to do better and to grow into its next design.
So you own and operate your own business. I imagine you have a couple of people that work for you as employees, right? From a business perspective, as a business owner and somebody who has experience here economically and personally, family, the whole bit, you see a positive future for Roswell.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's on the record, right? Yes, I see a positive future for Roswell, yes.
So people that are listening to the show and they're either just hearing about Roswell for the first time outside of the alien controversy, what would your message to them be for about our community and position in the world?
It is a jewel in the middle of nowhere. We are an oasis in a high desert. We are a place where you can come not only to relax and retire, but grow a family and extend your roots. Like you had just mentioned again, it depends on what culture you assimilate into when you move here. If you assimilate into the common sense culture, that's what I like to call it here in Roswell, you run across people who are genuine. In other parts of the country, they'll give you the fake welcome, the hi, hello. I promise you, in Roswell, if somebody doesn't like you, they're not going to let you in their house. There's very little fakeness. It's so hot. We've had to survive under hardship for so long. We are not willing to trust or share our resources with people who pose a serious threat to us. So people coming into Roswell, we are a little standoffish at first. We are a little reserved. But once we get a feel for you, once we get to know who you are and you're not trying to cause problems and grow into that and assimilate into the other faction of Roswell, we open you with open arms. Businesses will give you opportunities. The city council will willfully let you come and speak at their events. It's encouraged that public comment is endured. We have a police system here that is quite fair. If you look on the national average, Roswell has a police force that is overburdeningly polite. We're very fair. We are not totalitarian in our approach. I'm not going to get into politics, but it's the culture that we have here, because we will not put up with a police force that brutalizes its people. So we keep it in check. And it's just one of the strong points of Roswell.
You know, Guy, you had mentioned in the previous episode that Roswell was a place for respite and an oasis.
Oh, I like that. That's a good word, respite.
I love what he used the word oasis. Where I got part of that thinking from was a prayer group that was over 20 years ago in the 90s. They came to that conclusion that Roswell's redemptive purpose, why does it exist? You know, if I can use the word, why did God create Roswell and place it where he did? And we are, as you said, high desert, out in the middle of nowhere. We're 3 hours away from the major cities, you know, an hour away from the tinier ones. But as when I moved here, you had to drive over 3 hours to Albuquerque, park in a flat of their airport. We didn't have one. But yeah, the intercessors identified Roswell's redemptive purpose as an oasis for refreshment. And you can take that at many levels, spiritual as well as a good meal when you're driving through.
You know, one of the things that did get brought up when Guy and I were conversing in the first episode was the fact that Roswell is located almost 3 to 4 hours from any other metropolitan area. It doesn't matter if it's Albuquerque, Lubbock, or even El Paso, right? So with that said, there's the survival instinct because you're so far away from anything else, one. And two, that has also spawned its own cultural identity that's kind of unique in that sense, which also dovetails over into the performing arts here in Roswell, as well as the artistic talent that is here. We've got the Anderson, there's the Roswell Museum and Arts Center, we've got the two community theater companies here in town, the Roswell Community Little Theater, as well as Way Way Off Broadway. Carlsbad's got a community theater, and that's not terribly far, and Carlsbad's about the same size as Roswell.
A little smaller,
yeah. But
Roswell Symphony Orchestra,
which is fantastic.
Comes in from California, and he's also London.
Philharmonic Symphony.
Thank you.
Yeah, and we've got plenty of local musicians that play here. Carlsbad, mm-hmm. Ruidosa. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, Matt Palmer, Marie Manning, GDP.
Robin Scott. You know, the culture here is one that has embraced artistic talent, either performing arts or even just painters or sculptors or something. And the gentleman who bought our house before we moved here, this would have been June, he is a professional artist. I hope to have him on the show. His name is Albert. He moved here from North Carolina. The artistic talent of this guy is amazing. He's just out on a completely different world. My wife and my mother-in-law are also quasi-artists. They like to paint and stuff, but it's more of a hobby than it is clearly a profession. Although mom has started kind of a sculpting business, and she's got some of her clay stuff with flowers and whatnot up at the Roswell Museum and Arts Center, which dovetails over into a comment that you had made about the acceptingness of Roswellians. We moved here, and within 6 months, we had plugged into a community that was extremely accepting and open. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it has spawned, you know, a friendship here with Guy, and then I've met you. We had lived for 5 years in Omaha, Nebraska. Mm-hmm. And I think that we have felt an easier transition into a community here than what we felt in Omaha. It feels like what you said, you know, the people here are more genuine, or at least they come across as genuine, and there isn't this fakeness.
It's too hot to be fake. Get to the point.
Yeah.
Okay, so we are hitting the 40-minute mark. I've got
already. Wow, I know, it's been a lot of fun.
It can go, time can fly, but we'll certainly bring you in again. On the way out, is there anything that you would like to tell somebody about Roswell, either for visiting purposes or from the perspective of, hey, you know, they might be interested in moving? Who would be interested in coming to visit or even to move here and to potentially raise their family or something? We'll start with John, and then I'll let Guy handle the same comment.
I think that if you're coming for the aliens, you're going to be severely disappointed. As a Roswellian, I think we should get rid of the alien nonsense. If it cannot live under private support, then it should die. The city should not be involved in it. We need to move back towards being not only an agricultural powerhouse of southeastern New Mexico, but also an industrial powerhouse. Without getting into politics, we, even with the tumultuous decision-making that's been back and forth through our city council and our county commissioners, we still have unprecedented growth here in Roswell. Even with everyone not being on the same page, we are able to grow. Right now, we have to produce 400 and something homes a year. and we can't get developers to move in fast enough because of how Roswell's growing. And if we are growing at that rate without clear, concise leadership and agreeing on a plan, imagine what we'll accomplish when we can all come together in unity. Roswell has hope.
And that's why I'm endorsing John Arthur for mayor.
I'm running for magistrate judge, yeah, not mayor.
Well, I was really just stalling everyone until John ponied up and came into the arena, actually. I don't think we nailed something that Will was asking for.
No.
As much desolation we experienced financially and all that stuff, 70s, what do you think about the school of thought that aliens saved Roswell's financial future and life, that it's only that industry to which we owe all this great stuff that we have today? And everything closed.
Interesting question.
Okay. Coming from me, yeah.
Okay, well, so hey, I'm going to insert the gif of the deer eating popcorn.
Michael Jackson.
Oh, one, two, goodness. Three, go.
Okay, in 1972, Bell Helicopter Company wanted the Hueys and the Sea Stallions and so many other military and civilian aircraft, it's not even funny. Bell Helicopter Company wanted to come in on $1 million a year lease and rent out the entire base for their primary manufacturing facility and test facility here in Roswell. That alone would have carried Roswell. Oh, let's talk about economic development on an agricultural front. You're telling me that the pecan's one of the most valuable nuts in the world, and Roswell has third largest pecan fields in the world right now?
Pecan.com.
Would not suffice to do that. You're telling me that New Mexico Military Institute? You're telling me that all these other businesses that have moved in at the time, the Levi Strauss denim facility here in Roswell, not to mention New Mex Plastics, which is one of the leading providers for agricultural ranch water supply. We have the industry to support ourselves. Was it nice getting a quick cash boom from the tourist industry? Yeah, but that wealth never left the hands of 20 or 30 people. Yeah, it looks nice and it looks fancy, but where'd the money go? The money needs to go to the community. We need businesses. We need industries here in New Mexico.
Not a fan of the alien phenomenon myself, or at least our idolatry of it. See RoswellMission.org, which is what got me here in the first place, for more if you care about that. But I agree with you entirely that, A, the future is really bright for Roswell. One, what we do really well. The way the nation is moving right now, I mean, people talk everything from civil war to balkanization, but local communities are about to have way more power in the next 5, 10, 20 years than the federal government. The path I think that we're on now, Roswell is excellent for if you're self-sustaining, beef farmer, growing stuff, homesteading, get off the grid. We got wind, we got power, we got solar, which is what Bitcoin mining needs.
We don't have any natural disasters.
So yeah, I'm not certainly condoning a political conversation at all. Personally, I do know that we have libertarians in the room.
I'm a Christian. I don't care about political party. I'm going to do whatever I think is best.
The thought, though, I think Guy brought up pretty well is if you're self-sustaining. And so one of the things that I think somebody outside looking in, if they're looking for a cheaper community to live in that has everything that you could need, and you're not, you know, a complete 8-hour drive in the sticks to get somewhere else. If you're able to work remotely, you know, as a data engineer, data scientist, or a computer
copy
programmer,
editor, copy contact editor. Me if you need a proofreading.
So I think that Roswell has potential for individuals that are capable of working remotely, and with the way that the economy and the labor market is going right now, coming out of COVID, one of the things that keeps getting brought up in the HR space is the idea that workers have become very fond of the flexibility and the work-life balance that came with working remotely. And you have a labor pool that is pushing for that, and corporate America is trying to push back against that.
I actually find I let my bookkeeper work from home, full-time, 40-hour-a-week bookkeeper. I let her work from home because for her, it is she's able to focus more. And here's where a lot of business owners get it wrong. They think that you're going to focus more when you're in the cubicle. I've been stuck in the cubicle before. You end up daydreaming for hours. But the fact that her toddler gets to come in every once in a while and needs something opened or cut up, it allows her to be able to take a steady break and refocus your mind and revitalize, have a distraction, get back to work. And her productivity is actually up because she's not stressed out about whether or not the babysitter's taking appropriate care of her child or not. And that it is so much better. I grew up with a holistic homeschool approach. And I was not homeschooled, but I grew up with that culture, and I try to allow my employees to have that culture as well. It's one of the reasons one of our official statements in the Block Guy is you do not work so you can have a family. I'm sorry, you work so you can have a family. You don't have a family so you can go work. It's why we give three-day weekends every weekend. We do 4 10-hour days. And it not only does it assist my guys with being able to schedule appointments for Fridays when it's a business day and everybody's still open and you can go see the doctor, you can go run your errands, the state offices are open, and it gives me a day to be able to forecast that I'm not going to have a working crew. I can go do layout. I can go do acquisitions. I can go do whatever I need to do. And it's the culture that Roswell needs to move forward. If we want to innovate here, we need to start being kinder to our employees.
Excellent. Okay, great conversation. We are now at the 45-minute mark. Ooh. I'm going to call the show, but yeah, we'll have you in again, John, because I think that there's a lot to unpack just on, well, for crying out loud, let's just say it, we only scratched the surface today.
Yeah, you're one of my favorite people to learn from on these topics, John.
Oh, well, thanks. I like to ramble.
Okay, excellent. So, Guy Malone, thank you for showing up. BitcoinForABetterWorld.com. He's got the podcast going on. It's all about beginners and ignorant folks like myself about Bitcoin. And I know that the term cryptocurrency is going to ruffle your feathers there, but...
No, if you used it correctly in a sentence, I appreciate that. Crypto, then I'll nail you.
And we have John Arthur here, who, if you live in Roswell and are listening, he owns his own business in concrete and masonry stuff, so... Yep.
Which is theblockguy.com. We do brick, block, stone, tile, stucco, and concrete. And we are Roswell's premier and almost primary foundation resupport specialists.
Well, there you go. And he can probably cook you a really badass steak.
Yeah, you completely failed. John and I met in a restaurant, not at Jesus Tribe, which he described as an organization.
That's
which,
true.
Come on, it's five or six guys sitting in the backyard over a fire semantics. Pit. Yeah, but
we did work at Cattle Baron together. Yes, I was a fry
You
cook.
Told me. I didn't know that years ago.
I forgot about that. That was back in like 07, 08. Yeah.
I've moved away for a bit, got me some high-end steak and wine experience, and John and I, as soon as he's the only person in Roswell I ran into that knew the word sous vide in a sentence, yeah. And it was on from there for he and I. We're best friends.
So you know what we might end up having to do is a show entirely around the culinary artistry of southeastern New Mexico.
As a advocate for good home cooking, I would be honored to do that.
That would be awesome. All right, excellent. Thanks for joining us, everyone. William Atkinson Show. I'm your host, William Atkinson, here with Guy Malone, John Arthur. Thank you to both of you. We'll have you both back in the studio soon. For now, goodbye from Roswell.